It is a Friday, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben Fred Fridays on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com is always presented by Henderson and Watercutty. See what they can offer you, no matter how big or small the offense. STLCriminalDefense.com, STLCriminalDefense.com. They're available 24/7, 365 days a year. Many thanks to Henderson and Watercutty. I think they're going to enjoy our conversation today because we're going to get into a myriad of topics as we always do, but specifically college sports and the Rams are going to be first off. Ben, good morning to you. How are things?
Good morning, Dan. I'm doing well. Hey, and you forgot to mention, I think the Watercutty brothers are doing something now where if you take up some business with them, they'll give you tips on how to do your own quarantine haircut.
I did see that.
You see the... They went with the full buzz.
I
did mine a few weeks ago, so it's starting to grow out again now. But
how did
I can
it
relate,
feel,
man?
How did it feel?
I had not had hair that short since I was in high school, and my wife said I looked 10 years younger. So I guess that's a good thing. although I think it kind of freaked her out. But no, man, I was going nuts. So if you're on the breaking point, just go and shear it off. We're not going to probably be seeing each other in person for a while, so. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later, but there'll be plenty of time for it to grow back.
So is it itchy at all? What did it feel like?
No, man, it's great.
It's
you don't
liberating.
You don't have to use shampoo. You don't have to worry about bedhead. You just roll up, wake up and roll out of bed. Not that you have to worry about how you look now anyway, but it's completely liberating.
I bet it is. So if you get a speeding ticket or, you know, something that's a little bit more than a speeding ticket, Henderson and Watercutty can help you out there. And also, once we can, stop social distancing, they can help you with a haircut, too.
I think they need to give some tips on how to do it. The main thing would be don't forget the back. You got to have a kind of a spotter in the back. That helps you out.
So did you do it by yourself?
Yeah. But, I mean, I've done it before, so I wasn't completely a complete newbie at it. But you really got to dedicate more time to the back than you think, and it helps if you have somebody come by and give it the check over before you call it done.
That's awesome. This is also awesome. There's some news with the Rams, isn't there?
Yeah. How about this? Now this was expected, I think, by the folks who are paying close attention to this, but it's kind of a complicated thing. So I kind of think my job as someone who's won't pretend to be a lawyer or even good at that kind of stuff is trying to figure out a way that I can understand it and then try to explain it to people like me who are not as well versed in the inner workings of the legal system. And what happened on this week is pretty important, although it was expected. And what happened was the United States Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, had been asked by the Rams and the other folks who are part of this, and really the best way to explain it, Dan, is I explain it like a game. There's two teams. There's the St. Louis team, which is the city, the county, and the Dome Authority, and there's the Kroenke team, which is Dan Kroenke, the Rams, the entire NFL, all of the other 31 teams, and all of those teams' owners. That's the relocation lawsuit is against. And what the relocation lawsuit is about is it basically calls into question the league's relocation rules, which, you know, those were the document, the rules, if you will, that the league held up and said, we have to follow these. These must be followed. It was the inspiration and the reason that St. Louis spent $16 million trying to pitch and create a plan for a riverfront stadium that could have kept the team. It was really our one hope of keeping the Rams that they had to negotiate in good faith with their current place before they could leave. And what it specifically says against is that you have to have those conversations and you have to really exercise all the ways you could stay in a place before you take off. Of course, the Rams didn't do that. Of course, there's evidence that we know of, probably a lot more that the lawyers know of, that shows the Rams were never going to consider staying in St. Louis, and that the league really greased the wheels and kind of had a habit of saying the relocation guidelines mattered one day, turning around saying they mean nothing when they made the decision to move the Rams. So that's the relocation lawsuit. Now, from the beginning, the Rams, you know, the Kroenke side of things, have tried to say that this belongs in arbitration, not on the track that would lead to a public trial in front of a jury in a St. Louis courtroom. The Rams have wanted this to be under arbitration, and they have argued that their terms of their, you know, the lease that really gave them the loophole to push their way out of St. Louis. They've argued that the terms of that lease gave them an opportunity to have disagreements about the lease settled in arbitration. And people say, well, what's the difference between arbitration and court? Arbitration is where big business goes to settle things. It's not court. Things don't always get out. And also it's a business. Companies that spend a lot of money that take a lot of things through arbitration can tend to kind of get the upper hand in arbitration because they're frequent customers, if you will. So Kroenke loves arbitration. It keeps things under wraps. He has a little more influence perhaps on how things turn out. The team, St. Louis lawyers, have fought tooth and nail to keep this out of arbitration, to keep this headed toward court, where everything that comes out will be public, where it will be decided by a jury, not arbiters. And the Rams have pushed for that and appealed every time the St. Louis side won, all the way up to the Supreme Court. So Missouri Supreme Court a while back said, hey, this is not going to arbitration. This is going to court. And the Rams' last chance, the Hail Mary, if you will, was taking it and asking the Supreme Court to weigh in on this. And the Supreme Court said this week, hey, we're not going to spend our time on this. We've got a million requests. And they turned down a ton of invitations to look into things, and they turned this down. So what does that mean? And I'm trying to be condensed here, Dan, but it means that arbitration is no longer an option. It means that this thing, if it is not settled at some point, it will go to a courtroom in St. Louis in 2021. So that's where things stand right now. And that's good news, because arbitration would have been a home field advantage for Stan.
In terms of either settling or seeing this all the way through, what's your gut on what the folks that represent St. Louis on their side are going to do?
It's a fair question. Obviously one that everybody wants to know and wonders about. Hard to answer because we don't know what they found in their discovery. We know that Kevin Demoff said a million times that there was no plan to move, which was not the case. We know that as soon as he got to Los Angeles, he started talking about the long-held plans to make this happen. Basically coming as close to admitting his lies as anyone could. I mean, that interview that he gave to the Los Angeles Times on his way back to LA was really damning in hindsight. And he made a few comments like that have not really aged well for a group that argues there was no, quote, secret plan. And we know what Stan Kroenke has said before he stopped talking to media here in St. Louis. There are other things that are there, that we're not going to hear about unless or until this hits trial. The Rams have had to turn over mountains of documents for discovery to the lawyers. The league itself has had to turn over a ton of information. According to ESPN, which had a really interesting story on this a while back, when the relocation vote went down, there was a letter of indemnification that meant Stan was on the hook for all these legal expenses. So he's not only, you know, cost overruns at his stadium in Inglewood, he's paying for all this document, you know, producing of all these documents for discovery, which I'm sure is bothering him. And part of the reason he wanted to get it to arbitration too, it tends to be cheaper in these situations. But that's still going on. So all of that's in the works, the review of the documents. This is all laid out in the court scheduling order. It has a timeline of what leads up to this trial in 2021. Another thing that will happen will be basically a year's worth of depositions. If you're not a key witness or an expert called in to be in the trial, then you will be deposed, and all that will take place before court starts. So all of these interviews with four former Rams employees, with people who have things to answer about how this went down, all that's going to take place. So what comes out of that will, I think, determine or could influence the likelihood of a potential settlement. There also has to be a willingness on behalf of the NFL, right, Stan Kroenke and whoever's on that side of this, to want to settle. Right now, I am under no impression that there has been any conversation about a settlement. So that they have to want to settle in order to settle. And will they get there? Perhaps. I don't think the league wants this stuff getting out. I don't think the league wants all of this to become public knowledge about the way its relocation works. I think it would be bad for business if that happened. I also think that the ask on the St. Louis side of things, if it got to that point, would be staggeringly high. We're talking billions of dollars, you know, with a B. So I don't know that the league's going to give that up without a trial. Personally, for my sake, I I hope it gets to trial, because I think it'd be fascinating to cover. But I also understand where St. Louis side has to think about, you know, betting it all on that trial versus getting something in hand that could go toward replacing the money that was spent in vain on a rigged process. So that's going to be a tough conversation to have, and it's hard to know which way it could go until we know if that is a desire of Kroenke and his team, and also until we know, have a better idea of what the St. Louis side has on the league and has on the Rams.
Who do you think will be asked to testify in this? If you had to make a guess, who do you think some of the participants would be?
Oh man, there's a long list. I mean, Demoff would have to be included. Kroenke, you know, he can't stay silent if he's on a stand under oath. What about Eric Grubman, who, was the chief peddler for the league about how much these relocation guidelines mattered and why they were important. And then they were kind of shrugged off when push came to shove. Jerry Jones, who was an influential part of, you know, kind of encouraging Stan and really hammering through the Rams, getting the green light to go. He would have to be of interest, go all the way up to the top with Roger Goodell. I'd want to hear from the owners who didn't vote for this. You know, the two that said, no, we don't want to send the Rams to Los Angeles. I mean, that's just a short list, but think of all the employees, Dan, who were really, suffered in the loss of the team from St. Louis. There were employees who were not invited to come to Los Angeles. There were employees who were not willing to move their families to Los Angeles. There have been employees who have been fired after the transition to Los Angeles. There are a lot of people who I think would have some interesting things to say about the timeline they received. And also, too, you got to remember another win that the St. Louis side has was the phone records of all NFL owners going back multiple years. And people have a misunderstanding, I think, of what that means. It's not, you know, text messages. You can't see the contents of a text. But if you look up your phone bill, if you have, say, you know, Verizon, go download your most recent bill and look at it. And you can see what numbers you called, what numbers called you for how long, what day. You can see how that information would be valuable to the attorneys who are trying to piece together the timeline of what really happened. Of what was really happening against, if you know people's numbers, why was this owner calling this owner on this day, you know, to talk about what? It'd be worth finding out, because on this day, Kevin Demoff was saying something about the Rams not moving here in St. Louis. Meanwhile, these calls were going on behind the scenes. Those are the kind of questions you can get answered when you keep this thing in court.
You mentioned a settlement in the billions with a B, potentially, you would have to think. If that's the case in the current economic climate that everybody's in because of the virus, would the St. Louis side be more apt to settle, in your opinion?
It's a great question, and I can't speak for them. I don't know. It would be hard to turn down something guaranteed like that in hand versus risking it all on a court. However, to me, it's hard to imagine, you know, the St. Louis side of this not feeling confident walking into a St. Louis courtroom in front of jurors that are picked from the St. Louis area. I mean, that's talk about a home field advantage. That's one. So I think that's I think that's tough to know what the magic amount would be. I'll say this, though, and I want to see the league made an example from as much as anyone. But I think what you have to do here in the end is the groups involved have to make the best decisions for what they feel their constituents are. I mean, you don't want to see something lost because you're trying to shame the NFL. The NFL has no shame. We're not going to make it have shame. That's not going to change. But, you know, I think at the very least, you get the money back that was spent in vain. Then you get as much as you can to try to, try to help out the community and help out people who want to be here. I have zero interest, and I'm sure I'll upset some folks by saying this, but I have zero interest in some sort of potential settlement that could result in the NFL sending back a team or planting an expansion team or moving the Chargers here. I don't think that it should be on anybody's mind here who actually has a say in this of trying to reopen business with the NFL. When you have a bad business partner, the last thing you should do is give that business partner more business. The NFL made it very clear how it feels about St. Louis, what it was willing to accept, what Kroenke said about St. Louis, And that's been proven wrong. I mean, all you have to do is look at the Battlehawks, Dan, and see just the way in which that team led the pack for the XFL. Ticket sales, merchandise sales, attendance, social media fan engagement. To say that St. Louis didn't support football was slander. And the league went along with that story and tried to promote it and sell it. So, no, I don't think that St. Louis should be interested in opening its arms back up to a league that has very clearly made it known that it doesn't think very much of this area. So that would be the one thing that I feel strongly about. Determining what the number is, that's tough to know without knowing what the lawyers have on the league. But I would not want to see anything related to giving the NFL more business in St. Louis moving forward.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Speaking of football, it is vital to college sports. If we do not see football this fall, what do you think happens to the landscape of college football and college sports as a whole?
Well, I think we're going to see some pretty big changes. I think we're already seeing some of them. You've seen certain programs get cut. I think there will probably be a discussion about Title IX and perhaps loosening some of those restrictions, as programs that don't make money will be scaled back, including some women's sports. I think you'll probably see, at least for a certain amount of time, some of the more crazy and impatient coaching changes, the most expensive kind, scale back for a little while. It's going to be very hard for colleges to justify paying coaches not to coach in this phase. Paying these massive buyouts and then turning around and paying a massive contract to someone who is believed to be better. I think that kind of crazy spending is going to be put on hold for a while. And I think we could end up having a conversation about some of the financial decisions made by the NCAA and its biggest players. There's a very interesting story this week in the Washington Post about the NCAA's decision a while back to find ways to spend a bunch of its reserves. And it did that under the decision that it's not good for the NCAA to be sitting on a bunch of unused cash, because that makes the argument that they have too much money and should be doing more to help student athletes more prevalent. So as opposed to finding a way to pay student athletes and give them a bigger slice of the pie, the NCAA basically said, let's find a way to blow this money. And that's what it has done. I mean, we see these colleges, they spend money on facilities. These athletic departments spend money on facility upgrades that are not necessary. They spend money on coaching and coaching staffs that are not proven, or they pay, I don't have the number, I could have looked it up, but the amount of money that some of these programs have spent on coaches to not coach because they've been fired, there clearly can be a better way of handling spending in college sports. And I think we're going to have those conversations here before too long. I also think we'll see just how important college football is to the NCAA. If they have to push this thing back to January, they'll find a way to make it work. They are desperate to play some sort of a college football season, and I think that's going to take precedent here as this moves forward.
Yeah, I it's interesting. If you can have sports without fans, which may happen on the pro ranks, we'll see. Can you do that, though, in college? Now, clearly there are some of the conferences that have major, major television deals. So there's some money coming in, big money coming in with that. But generally speaking, can you have sports in college without fans?
Yes. At the biggest levels, yes. And this will probably in some ways be even more of a divide between the haves and the have-nots. Ohio State, Clemson, Texas, these schools will find a way to make money by playing on TV. If you are, San Diego State, can you do that? Or how much of their percentage of money is based off of attendance versus TV rights? But every significant conference has a TV deal. And there's a misguided notion that the college sports, college football gets most of its money from attendance sales and not TV revenue. They get a lot of money from attendance, from butts in seats, but that number has been declining, and that the other number, the TV number, has been escalating. And these decision makers will decide, like all the other leagues, like pro sports, that some money is better than no money if they have to play in front of no fans. So I think that's something that will probably, you know, dictate which programs survive, which programs are in a lot better spot if they're allowed to play games and get the benefits of the TV deals, because that TV money is the biggest thing in live sports, period. It doesn't matter whether you're college or pro. Now, some of them make more than others, and some of them really will, you know, take a divot if they can't have people in attendance. But putting games on TV, putting live sports on TV, is going to make any sport a lot of money, especially because especially if you can be one of the first to do it, because there's such a desperation for it.
And there's been talk of that with the National Hockey League, with Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, coming out and saying, not only do they want to continue to play hockey at some point this summer, but they want to finish the regular season. What did you think about the plan of going, I guess it was in four different arenas across the country and trying to do this without fans?
Well, it's kind of similar to the latest MLB proposal that has come out about there being three altered leagues, one in Florida, one in Arizona, and one in Texas. And I guess I can understand why Gary Bettman wants to do this, because, you know, and the players are going to probably support it, because here's why: there's not that many games left. It's different for a hockey player to say, yeah, I'll go live in a quarantine hotel for the rest of the regular season and whatever the postseason looks like, because it's not that much time. They also get a pretty even split, about 50-50 between players and teams when it comes to that postseason revenue, which is a significant portion of the league's overall pot. And in addition to that, that revenue directly affects next year's salary cap. So if you're a pending free agent like an Alex Pietrangelo, you want to play these games. You want the league to make that money, because it's going to mean more money for you in free agency, whether you're going to another team or finding a way to stay with the Blues. So that's the motivation, is, you know, finding a way to keep the salary cap at least where it is, hopefully grow it, as opposed to taking it a step down, which will mean less money for all. So understand certainly the desire. As with anything right now, I question the viability of it. I hope it works. I want it. Believe me, as someone who will, you know, not be working for 2 weeks in June because there are no sports to cover at the moment, and the impact that has had, this whole thing has had, I want to get back to covering games, and I want us to get going. However, what remains to be answered is how exactly it's going to work in terms of testing, in terms of the level of quarantine of players, in terms of what the players are willing to sacrifice, what happens if there's a positive test. All of these things remain questions that, while it's fun to plan and talk about what could happen, we still haven't seen any hard details, whether it's hockey or baseball, about what it will look like in order to keep it from just coming off the rails if one player or one team comes down with the virus.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Speaking of hockey, Blues extensions being handed out by Doug Armstrong, the Blues GM, and you mentioned Alex Pietrangelo, and we talked a little bit about this last week, but do you have any clarity on where that might be? Would he accept a one-year deal to reset the market as the market then comes back up if we have a full season and fans next year and then the cap goes up? Or do you see him potentially just saying, you know what, I'm staying in town, I'm signing a long-term deal, and that's that. What do you think?
Well, I think it would be hard for Petra to take a one-year deal because of the season that he had before things shut down. I mean, he really made the most of this year when he was earning himself money. So to bet on yourself to do that all over again, there's some risk there. Maybe he feels confident he can and could be, you know, right back in the seat that he was in next year. So it's an option. The other thing that would be interesting to me would be if he's if he wants the money in hand, if he wants the guaranteed, if he doesn't want to take kind of a reset deal, I think this encourages him to be back with the Blues. Now, some people may disagree, and they'll say, well, the Blues, you know, there was a lot of discussion last week about the Blues signing Scandella, and, oh, that means Petrangelo's gone. Well, if you look at it that way, okay, maybe. And what it does mean for sure is that there's enough salary cap space committed next year that if Petrangelo does re-sign with the Blues, that somebody's got to go. So that much we do know. But I never looked at it as Scandella being the reason Petrangelo won't be back. To me, the Scandella signing, the extension, was about Jay Bouwmeester not being back. And I think that's kind of more of the apples-to-apples comparison there. The Blues want Alex Petrangelo to remain with the Blues. They want to make him a good offer. Will they make him the best offer? I don't know. And that's where we're going to get into the fine details here. And again, I think it kind of helps the Blues, because there's going to be, if the salary cap stays the same or decreases, there will be probably fewer teams that can offer Petrangelo the kind of deal the Blues cannot come or will not come close to matching. If it's relatively close, there are a lot of reasons that suggest Petrangelo should come back to St. Louis. He'll never buy another drink in this town again. He has family in the area. He's got a young family. I mean, triplets that, you know, you wouldn't have to put through a move. So what he could end up having to decide is what is worth the price of leaving, and will the decreased or stays the same salary cap, you know, will a team be able to match that? I don't think, knowing him and knowing what's important to him, I don't know him as well as some others, but just being around him a little bit, it's hard for me to imagine he just wants to go to any team that will pay him the most. I think he wants a chance to compete. I think he wants a chance to try to win. So that decreases the pool a little bit more. So the Blues have ways of finding a fit for him if he decides to come back on a competitive deal. And I think they're willing to pay him well. It's going to come down, I think, to what he wants and whether or not his vision matches up with his agents and who he sides with over kind of his idea for himself or this kind of chasing of the most money. The Blues can do a million things. They could trade Jake Allen. They could buy out Alexander Steen. They could find a way to trade Justin Falk, even though he has a no-trade clause. Those can be worked around. In hockey, Justin Falk could also be taken in the expansion draft. So there are a lot of ways the Blues could free up money. I took Doug Armstrong's actions, Dan, as a GM who's not going to wait around, who wants to have his ducks in a row. I think what he's done is he's really kind of cleared the playing field now to just have the Petrangelo situation on his books, where he feels like he has flexibility and he doesn't feel like he has to be backed into any corner when it comes to making a desperate offer for the captain.
I'll wrap it up with this. Here we are, well over a month now into no sports. Just a simple question. What do you miss about sports?
I miss seeing my friends, man, up there on the top of the list. You know, it's fun to maybe write some more creative things, and it's been great catching up with some folks on the phone, but I miss being around everybody. I miss the conversations that we have in the dugout before a game, or, you know, chatting each other up, or, you know, stopping by the booth to say hey before a Cardinals game, or, you know, that's what I really enjoy, the banter with colleagues. I think it makes me write better. I think it's one of the reasons I've always loved this job and felt like I never really work, is because really half of work is hanging out with your buddies. So I miss that a lot. And I miss turning on a sports game where I don't know what's going to happen too.
Yeah.
That's the big part of it as well.
Hey man, great stuff. Hopefully the hair continues to grow out. We'll get an update next week. And you know what I'd like to hear? I'd like to say, hey, we have a target date. This is the target date. I'd look forward to something like that next week. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that would be great. That's something to mark on the calendar and start counting the days down would be ideal.
Hey buddy, hang in there. We'll talk to you next Friday. Thanks so much.
Sounds good, man. See ya.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.